This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Shabbat Shalom, Juma Mubarak, TGIF, whatever it may be for you. Happy Friday. And it is Anything Goes Friday. So if there's anything on your mind, any topics you'd like to talk about, our telephone number is 202-808-9925. And we will be taking your calls on, you know, pretty much whatever's on the top of your mind. I wanted to just share with you my thoughts on what looks like is going to be coming probably at the end of the day today or sometime next week, although it could take several weeks because Bob Barr is in the middle of the process. Bill Barr. I keep thinking of, you know, my old congressman from Atlanta, Bob Barr, who I met at Manny Maloof's Tavern a couple of times, and he was a crazed Republican. In fact, he's still out there being a crazed Republican, but he was also, you know, nice guy to have a beer with. But in any case, Bill Barr is the Attorney General. He was the Attorney General who in 1992 advised George Herbert Walker Bush to cover up the Iran-Contra crimes of Reagan and Bush and shut down the investigation by Special Prosecutor Lawrence Walsh at that time. And the way he shut down those investigations was by pardoning Caspar Weinberger and Ollie North and Elliot Abrams and a couple of other people whose names are kind of lost to the obscurity of time. And I've been predicting, I wrote an op-ed a month or two ago saying, you know, he did it before for the Republicans. Bill Barr is a guy who knows how to cover up crimes for Republicans. That's what he does for a living. I mean, you know, he went from that into private law practice, helping out people with their crimes. And you know, now he's the Attorney General again. And so Mueller works for him. And the State Department, the Department of Justice guidelines that were developed under the administrations of two different presidents who were both facing the possibility of impeachment or indictment because they had both committed crimes. The Justice Department guidelines that were developed by those attorneys general in those two White Houses, those guidelines say you can't indict a sitting president. And Bob Mueller is the kind of guy, he was, you know, a Marine, and, you know, you tell him, this is the way it is, and he says, sir, yes, sir. You tell him, take that hill, and he takes that hill. You tell him, you can't climb that hill, he doesn't climb that hill. I mean, it's just that simple. And so Mueller has said that he's going to operate within the guidelines of the Justice Department, as has Bill Barr. But Bill Barr took it a step beyond that. Now, if the Justice Department guidelines say you can't indict a sitting president, and Mueller found crimes by Trump that are worthy of indictment, he nonetheless will not indict because that's what the Justice Department guidelines say from two previous presidents who had committed crimes. So if he doesn't indict, this is where it gets real interesting. What Barr has said, what Bill Barr has said, our Attorney General, is that if there's no indictment, if somebody's not criminally charged, and he said this in general, right? So when he said it, I think a lot of people thought, oh, he's talking about people like George Papadopoulos, not even literally George, because he got busted, but, you know, maybe Hope Hicks, you know, somebody who got involved in this thing, got caught up in it, maybe is on the edge of getting in trouble, but we decided that what they did isn't all that bad, so we're not going to indict them. And so what Bill Barr said is, if somebody isn't indicted, I'm not going to release the information on that person. It wouldn't be right. Right, if Hope Hicks made some bad decisions, but they weren't actually crimes, you know, why smear her name in public by talking about the part of the Mueller report that refers to Hope Hicks? And I think everybody, you know, is going, yeah, well, that makes a certain amount of sense. You know, if she's not being, you know, if you can't prove that she committed a crime, then, you know, why should you go out and talk about what she did? Which is fine logic for everybody except Trump. But Bill Barr has said he intends to apply that logic to Trump. He said it in his confirmation hearings. So if Donald Trump is not indicted, which he won't be, even if there's proof that he colluded with Russia, if he's not indicted, then the information about Donald Trump will not be transmitted to Congress or the American people by the Attorney General. It will be redacted. It'll be deep sixed. I think we can predict that right now, which means that Rudy Giuliani and Donald Trump are going to be all over the media next week and all the way to 2018 saying, see, no indictment, no information, nothing to see here. This was a witch hunt. There's nothing going on. Because Bill Barr will have used this kind of, I wouldn't call it a technicality in the law, but I think a terrible failure of two previous presidential administrations, both of which had guys in the White House who could have been indicted for crimes, where the Attorney General ordered the lawyers in the DOJ to come up with guidelines for the DOJ about whether they could prosecute a sitting president. In both cases, they said, we don't think it's a good idea. Now, in neither case did they say it's impossible or illegal or unconstitutional. They just said it's not a good idea because the president is so busy being president that he shouldn't be distracted by a criminal trial, wait until after he's out of office. And then we get into all these issues about statutes of limitation. You know, most crimes have statutes of limitations associated with them. Murder is one of the few that doesn't. But most crimes do, and, there's a lot of speculation that some of Trump's crimes, certainly, particularly his financial crimes, which typically have a 10-year statute of limitations, that those crimes will have run out at the end of this presidential term and certainly would run out if he's in office until 2024, as he's pushing 80 years old. So I'm telling you, get ready. Get ready for Trump and Fox to be running victory laps. Now this is, you could say this is the worst case scenario. I think this is the most probable scenario, frankly. And I've been saying this for months, by the way. Go back and read my op-ed about William Barr and exactly what he intended to do. So, I'll toss that on the table for you. There's a whole bunch of other little interesting little news stories out there that particularly Fox News' obsession with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez that we'll get to as we go through the program. But, it is Anything Goes Friday, so let's pick up your phone calls here. David in Oceanside, California. Hey, David, what's on your mind today? Thanks for watching us on Facebook Live. What's up?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I called you a couple weeks ago. I have this 980 work schedule where I get every other Friday off, so every other Friday you seem to get a phone
cool.
call from me.
Thank you, dude.
I called you about my views on climate change and, how I don't believe in climate change. I understand the science, and I didn't get to finish that point because the music cut me off.
Okay.
So what I think people really need to understand, be educated on, and I think you may actually, you say you're a pilot, you may be familiar with this, the difference between energy and power. Take a gallon of gasoline, that's energy. That's energy stored in the chemical bonds of the hydrocarbons, the carbon and the hydrogen atoms. Mix it with oxygen, it burns, and you get power out of it. Now, that gallon of gasoline represents solar energy that was collected, millions of years ago on an acre of swampland being hit by solar energy for days or weeks or months,
right?
However many, and that gets distilled and concentrated down to that 1 gallon of gasoline.
Correct.
The point is that, all these alternatives, wind, solar, are great, but people have to realize that there's still a limit to the amount of power it can put out. You have rooftop panels all over Germany, and it's shutting down their coal plants. Great thing. But when we start electrifying all the vehicles, we're going to actually have to start taking acreage that is not dedicated to, human occupation and start covering that with solar cells like the Chinese have actually started to do.
Right. They're running solar panels along the sides of their roads on the medians that are strong enough that if you occasionally pull a car over, because it breaks down, they won't break. But they're not strong
right.
enough that you could use them for a road surface. But they make a great... what's that called? Shoulder for the roads.
Yeah, and the biggest point I want to make is that you have these hucksters out there. I saw one where you clip this thing on the hood of your car, hook it on the fuel manifold, and you can put water in your gas tank and it'll run your car. Of course, this is hokum. It just doesn't work like that.
Right. Well, but it might work like that if you had a hydrogen fuel cell and a giant battery to do the electrolysis on the water. But otherwise, no, you're right.
Right. And the guy buys this thing and says, oh, my God, science lied to me. Climate change must be a hoax.
Right.
And so this is why I'm thinking, you know, the education is key. Because if people just blindly believe in climate change because they're a Democrat, they can be flipped. And we need to get people to understand that.
Yeah, there is actual science here. And, at the risk of scaring the hell out of everybody, and you too, David, I encourage people to check out arctic-news.blogspot.com. It's a website where a lot of climate scientists will share their darkest thoughts. David, thank you for the call.
Yeah, latent heat of fusion.
Yeah, there you go. We've got that fusion reactor just 93 million miles away from us that sends us a lot of power. David, thank you for the call. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's 17 minutes past the hour. It's Anything Goes Friday, taking your calls on whatever you'd like to talk about today. Stick around. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Gary, listening on KPFK in Los Angeles. Hey, Gary, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You spoke briefly about a week ago about the evangelical supporting Trump because of the whole King Cyrus thing, right?
Well, it's the other way around. They were supporting Trump because he promised to keep intact the tax exemption for churches, even if they engaged in political activity. And the big mega churches guys love that.
And then
they came up with King Cyrus as the rationalization for why they could be supportive of a guy as corrupt as Trump.
You're mistaken in that, Tom. There were evangelicals, quote unquote, prophesying that Trump would be the modern day King Cyrus before the election.
Right.
They've been saying this for years.
No, I get that, but it's just a justification.
Please let me finish my thought.
Sure.
You said something about Cyrus having supported Muhammad. That's got the history all
that's wrong.
Wrong.
You're absolutely right. Cyrus was before Muhammad was even born.
A millennium before. A millennium before Muhammad.
Yeah.
What Cyrus was the emperor of Persia, modern day Iran. He conquered Babylon. The Hebrews were being held in slavery in Babylon. Cyrus conquered Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, released the Hebrews, allowed them to return to Palestine, and implemented the building of the second temple, Babylonians having destroyed the original temple. And then that was the temple, the second temple was the temple that was still in existence when Jesus was alive.
Right.
And that temple was destroyed by the Romans in 70 CE or AD, whatever you want to say.
Right.
Now, the modern-day evangelicals, and I belong to, for a few years in the 70s, I belonged to a charismatic church in Florida. I learned about the...
I did, too, in Michigan. I was a member of the North Lansing Church of God.
Okay. Now, they are expecting the return of Christ any day now. However, before that can happen, according to their understanding of the Bible, is that the temple has to be rebuilt. And it has to be built on the Temple Mount, where the rock is currently.
Right, which is why Alan Goodman did what he did.
And then there has to be the Battle of Armageddon.
Yep.
Many of them believe that the Battle of Armageddon is going to be a nuclear war.
Yep.
So Trump comes along, and they, like I say, before he was even considering running for president, they were saying he's going to be the new King Cyrus.
Gary, got 30 seconds.
Yeah. So they believe he's going to implement the rebuilding of the temple and the bringing on Armageddon nuclear war so that Jesus can return.
Right.
Trump, who knows what he really believes, but Pence is a reconstructionist. He believes that stuff.
Yeah, and so does Pompeo.
Yes. And they believe the only law that they're beholden to is their interpretation of Mosaic law. The human law is meaningless.
Right, and revelations, yeah.
Yeah.
So your point, Gary, real quick?
they're very dangerous people, and we have to be aware of that this is their agenda.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I absolutely agree. Gary, thank you, and thanks for correcting my Cyrus and Muhammad thing, because I figured out about a half hour after I got off the air, and somebody corrected me on Twitter, and I thought, oh, yeah, of course. I mean, you know, Muhammad was long after the Old Testament era, as it were. Gary, thank you for the call. We'll be right back. It's 21 minutes past the hour. Apropos of my opening rant, if we were doing a normal day and I was saying, okay, here's the question for the day, it's how should we react? How can the Democratic Party best react? How could we as Democrats best react, or as progressives, when Trump and Fox News and right-wing hate radio all proclaim victory, if that's how this plays out, which is fully what I'm expecting? Marcia in Englewood, Florida. Hey, Marcia, you wanted to talk about bankruptcy?
Hey, Tom. Good morning to you.
Thank you.
I was cleaning house or something, and I always have free speech on. And when I turned off the vacuum cleaner, I heard some, looked like a documentary of a bunch of Spanish-speaking only restaurant workers, and I think it was in Los Angeles, where they were saying that they hadn't been paid by their employers for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. One of them was behind to the tune of $61,000 of his employer withholding his salary. What was happening is the restaurant owners, when they owed so much money to their employees, were filing for bankruptcy.
Right. This is businesses commonly do this, Marcia.
To me, somebody's got to start looking at these bankruptcy laws, because what it looks like is a get-out-of-jail-free card for any thief that owns a business that doesn't want, like Donald Trump, that doesn't want to pay his workers, doesn't want to pay his contractors, doesn't want to pay anybody, has the money, has the resources to pay them, just doesn't want to do it.
Yeah, I totally agree, Marcia. And if you go back 30, 40, 50 years, what you'd find is the bankruptcy laws had a whole bunch of exceptions where people couldn't, you know, bail out of, you know, we're talking corporate bankruptcy here, where if a corporation went into bankruptcy before they sold off and distributed the assets in the general market, or after they did that once the money was there, they had to pay off the pensions of any of the workers. They had to pay off the salaries of the workers. I mean, there was a whole bunch of specific stuff that had to do with labor law and bankruptcy law. I should toss in the caveat here. I'm no expert on bankruptcy law, but I've never gone through a business bankruptcy, but my understanding is that in the 80s or 90s, and then again in 2005, in the bankruptcy legislation that basically Joe Biden pushed through, the Bankruptcy Reform Act of 2005, that in both those cases, A lot of those requirements that employers honor, pension funds and things like that, were just blown up, which is one of the reasons why after the Reagan era, a number of airlines, they were the most famous ones, Eastern and TWA, as I recall, maybe not Eastern, but certainly TWA, and Pan Am, I think, was the other one, where when they went through bankruptcy, they were also able to basically screw the pensioners, you know, just to take the pension money or, you know, whatever. It went from being a liability to being an asset, and thus it could be distributed. And I agree with you. I think we need serious reform of our bankruptcy laws, and we need to undo the provision that was written into that 2005 legislation at the request of the banksters, probably in Delaware. We need to undo the provision that says that you may not declare bankruptcy, a personal bankruptcy, on student debt, because that's just crazy and just wrong. So, Marcia, thanks. Thanks for calling. Mark in Las Vegas. Hey, Mark, we got a minute to the break. A quick one on electric vehicles here.
Yes.
What's
there up? I took off speakerphone. Yeah, I heard the gentleman call in earlier about basically talking about how gasoline concentrates much more energy than the sun does, and while that's true, it neglects a couple of simpler things. Our car, we have a Tesla Model 3, which we love, goes much farther per unit of energy than a gasoline car ever could.
Yes.
So we use
because it's much more efficient
energy.
Yeah. The same thing with my Prius hybrid plug-in. It's when I'm just running on electricity, it's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And your plug-in and any electric vehicle has one essential feature that an internal combustion engine car can never match, and that is we get cleaner over time as the grid cleans up.
Yes.
And regular cars pollute for hundreds of years.
Yes. Yeah. And they get dirtier over time, too, as the rings start going. Mark, excellent. Yep. Thank you very much. And I got to tell you, I am so loving this plug-in hybrid. I have not used electricity in a long, long time. Gasoline.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
I have not driven using anything except electricity for a long, long time. Oh, boy. It's Friday. You can tell. We'll be right back. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Oliver in New York City. Hey, Oliver, what's on your mind today?
Good afternoon, Tom. I'll make this very brief. Two things. There's an article published in The Intercept by Glenn Greenwald, and it has videotapes of what they're saying in that article. That, remember the Trump administration blamed Maduro for burning up those aid trucks on the bridge?
Yeah, that's been completely discredited. It's a lie.
Yeah, because the video shows that it's the opposition.
That's correct.
Who Molotov cocktails on those trucks and burn them all up.
You're right. And it's outside of Amy Goodman, it's been completely absent from American media reporting.
Yes, yes. Now, the other thing I wanted to say very briefly, I listened to a federal prosecutor who used to work for the, New York State?
There's two districts in New York, Southern and Northern. It would have been one of those two. Southern is principally New York City. Northern is everything else.
Right. He was a former prosecutor for the Southern District.
Right.
He said in an interview that the Justice Department only has a policy that a sitting president can't be indicted.
You're correct. It is not a law. It's not a rule, even. It's just a policy. But Mueller has said he will respect that policy, and Bill Barr has said he will follow that policy. So we are SOL.
But the law on the books for the government, the whole federal government, says that he can be indicted if he committed crimes.
I agree with you.
Yeah, okay, that's all I wanted to add to.
Okay, well, that was my opening rant, Oliver, is that we need to get ready for the fact that Bill Barr is, the Attorney General, and Trump are going to use, and frankly Mueller as well, are going to use a policy that was developed by two different presidents, twice now, two different White Houses have had their Justice Departments examine whether or not it's appropriate to indict a sitting president for a crime. And in both cases, they said, no, he's too busy. And they're, to being president. And it would be a danger to the nation if the president was distracted from being president. Well, now we've got a president who spends 6 hours a day watching TV and tweeting, and who has spent more time on the golf course in his 2 years in office than any other president did in their lifetimes, I think. And we're going to use a policy designed to protect his time because he's so busy. It doesn't make any sense. The policy is wrong, but they're going to use it, and Trump is going to claim victory, and we better damn well get ready for that because that's coming, and that's going to be the thing that he's going to try to ride to victory and re-election in 2020, and it's damn near possible. Oliver, thank you for the call. JT in Austin, Texas. Hey, JT, what's up?
Hey, hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I just want to throw this out there, and I don't know the answer, but regarding North Korea, my understanding is the United States is still technically at war with North Korea.
That's correct.
Okay, so you have Trump, and he's basically acting like a public relations firm for Kim Jong-un.
He was. We just slapped some new sanctions on North Korea, and as a consequence of that, North Korea just pulled out of this joint kind of conversation with South Korea program that they had going, which is causing South Korean President Moon no end of hand-wringing. But you continue wherever you were going with that.
Well, that may be, but Trump tweeted that North Korea was no longer a nuclear threat. I mean, that was clearly a lie. He said he trusts Kim Jong-un. He says he believes him regarding the barbaric torture of Otto Warmbier, a U.S. citizen.
Correct.
He halted the military exercises with readiness exercises with South Korea, and he says he believed Putin regarding North Korea's nuclear missile capability.
Instead of his own intelligence agencies, yes.
Yeah, and my understanding is that Russia has a defense industry cooperation agreement with North Korea. So where I'm going with this...
And they share a border with North Korea, by the way.
Yeah, but they help supply their military. So under the constitutional definition of treason, and I don't know the answer to this, it says giving aid and comfort to the enemy.
At time of war, during time of war.
Well, but we're in a state of war with North Korea, are we not?
We are.
There may be a ceasefire, but we're still technically in a state of war. And Kim Jong-un's stature has been raised dramatically on the world stage. And Putin...
So JT, you're suggesting, I've never heard this argument made before, but it makes perfect sense, that because we are at war with North Korea, that's the one place in the world where Trump could be giving aid and comfort to another government, and it would be during times of war.
Not an enemy.
Yeah, and so therefore it would qualify as actual treason. Yeah.
Yes. And lastly, but saying he believes Putin, who is the key ally of Kim Jong-un, according to North Korean media.
Yeah. But Russia, we are not at war with Russia right now. So, giving aid and comfort to Russia might be bad politics, and it might be a violation of a whole bunch of other laws, but it's not treason by the definition that is generally accepted, which has to do with times of war.
But Kim Jong-un is an enemy.
But with Kim, you're absolutely right, and I don't know how I overlooked that this last year or so, because Trump is giving aid and comfort to the enemy. I mean, this would be like Franklin Roosevelt during World War II saying, "Well, Hitler's not such a bad guy."
I'm in love with Hitler. I mean, can you imagine? What if Harry Truman? I'm in love with North Korea.
It
doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. And you're absolutely right. And if the tables were turned, if a Democratic president had been doing this with Kim, the Republicans would be trying to have him charged with treason right now, using your logic,
Democrats
JT.
The Democrats would charge him with treason.
Oh, they would join the Republicans, but the Republicans would they'd be at the front of the parade. And, but their outrage is extraordinarily selective. JT, thanks for that. Thank you. Brilliant. Denise in Seattle. Hey, Denise, what's on your mind today?
Hello. How are you?
I'm great. What's
Thanks
up?
Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this program always makes me think so much, but the thing I called about was actually when Beto announced that he was running for president, I was actually hoping that that's who Bernie would pick or Stacey. Mm-hmm. And I think having that knowledge to begin with is really valid. And so the discussion yesterday was so interesting to me about the whole the man who won in Mexico and how he had his whole cabinet and everything. I think that's a wonderful idea. And as far as what Dems need to do, what happened to impeaching him?
Impeaching Trump?
Yes.
The Democrats have been engaging in magical thinking, frankly. They've been hoping that Robert Mueller is going to find that Donald Trump actually colluded with Russia, went to Russia, said, you make me president and I'll drop the sanctions. And I'm guessing that there actually isn't evidence of that. I'm guessing that that's essentially what happened. But Trump had been basically saying from the get-go that he was in favor of dropping the sanctions because therefore Russia would, of course, come in and do whatever they can to help him get elected that they perceive they could either A, get away with, or B, might be within the law. It just makes sense, and it doesn't require collusion for that to happen. And I think, frankly, that's what did happen. Trump got a little help from his friends,
Right. that investigation aside, there's so many things that they could, treason, that they could
emoluments
clause.
Yeah.
All of the things. There's things that can be done. Why isn't it?
The Democrats have been keeping their powder dry until the Mueller report comes out. I think the Mueller report's going to come out, and Trump is going to claim that it's vindication. And as a consequence of, you know, claiming that it's vindication, it's going to be a whole lot harder now, as a consequence of that, for Democrats to pursue impeachment based on the crimes that we already know about, like the campaign finance crimes, you know, where he paid off Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels. And therefore, and this was the week after the Access Hollywood tape was made public. So had the Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels story come out that following week, which Trump prevented by, you know, $260,000 worth of hush money payments, had those stories come out, I seriously doubt he'd be in the White House right now. So even setting aside Russia, you can build a case that, Trump broke the law in a way that changed the outcome of an election, and therefore he is an illegitimate president. But the problem
and all
is
all the money he gets from the presidency. It's just like so.
Oh yeah, that's going. You know, that's a, you know, the emoluments thing is a separate thing. But you're absolutely right on that too. The problem is it's going to be really hard now for the Democrats to gin up enough outrage about this to produce an impeachment.
I'm outraged.
Because it's been in the public so long.
Yeah,
and people are going to be like, well, you weren't upset about it a month ago. Why are you upset about it now? You know, that's how Trump and his buddies are going to play this, Denise. And that's I may be wrong, and I hope I am, you know, and I hope that Mueller comes out and says, OK, here's what he did, you know, and bang. And it's right off to impeachment. But I'm, you know, particularly given that Bill Barr, who is an expert at covering up Republican crimes, this is what he has been doing for a living for 40 years. On and off, and certainly did during the George H.W. Bush administration. It's going to be tough. Denise, thanks for the call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's coming up on 45 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. Talk media for the rest of us, the place where smart people get their news. And welcome back, Steve in Zimmerman, Minnesota. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, I was wondering if you could help me out with this rumor I had heard regarding the two Boeing airplanes that crashed.
Right. Sure.
The story I'm getting is that part of the reason those two planes had not received their software updates was directly impacted by a recent government shutdown.
Yes and no. Boeing is working on a software update to fix the MAX problem that they learned about after the Lion Air crash. And that update has to go through certification by the FAA. And when the government shut down, the FAA was unable to process that update. What we don't know is if Boeing has finished the update, if at the time of the government shutdown, Boeing had finished the update and was just waiting for government certification. It's increasingly looking like Boeing is still working on the update. And if that's the case, then the government shutdown probably had nothing to do with it.
Okay, and I was just wondering on how that whole timeline went and whether we can attribute all those deaths to Trump or not.
Yeah, you'd have to ask, you know, the engineers at Boeing, and they're very much not talking right now. So it's a good question, but we don't know the answer to it. Steve, thank you for the call. Cheryl in Philadelphia. Hey, Cheryl, thanks for watching Free Speech. What's up?
Hey, Tom. First of all, what you posited at the beginning, I agree. I've been thinking all along that the Mueller investigation being put up on a pedestal like that, that there's going to be some way that
it was a huge mistake. You know,
yeah.
Tom Steyer was absolutely right. We should have started impeachment hearings as soon as we discovered
that there were crimes. By the way, Tom Steyer, a woman who just called and asked about impeachment and that it's dead. I just got an email from Tom Steyer's organization because I did sign, pledge, 2 years ago?
Right. Yeah, me too.
For his appeal for impeachment signer, co-signers. That they're asking people to contact, Majority Whip, Representative Jim Clyburn, contact him ASAP and urge impeachment.
Right.
I think whatever comes out in the Mueller investigation, there will be enough and to go with impeachment. And I'll tell you, that fellow that called the call before then, I hope that you run with that, Tom, or somebody that runs op-eds.
Right.
When he said that about North Korea being the enemy and he's been given comfort by Trump, never popped into my head before he said it.
Yeah.
There is a there there. That is something.
Yeah, I agree.
I
absolutely agree. And particularly now that Trump's efforts have gone south. I mean, prior to this point, probably people would have been reluctant to go after Trump for that because, you know, hey, if you're being nice to your enemy during time of war with the goal of ending the war, then, you know, that's not treason. But if now that, you know, this is all blown up and Trump is continuing to say nice things about Kim and, you know, et cetera, then it may well meet the dictionary definition or the legal definition.
Exactly. But before I go, the reason that I called, though, and I don't know if it was your show or what, but the Trump voting machines, Ivanka Trump got a patent for voting machines.
That's correct.
China, when she was supposed to have given up all her patents back last autumn.
Yeah.
That somebody needs to run with that.
Well, she doesn't draw a paycheck, so she's not a government official, so this is not an emolument. But she's doing government business, but she's doing it with private email. I mean, this is worse than the Republicans' worst fears about Hillary Clinton. This is terrible. Cheryl, thank you. Welcome back. Mick in Santa Cruz. Hey, Mick, what's on your mind today?
Good morning.
Hey.
I'm glad that you're still vertical. I mean, I am as well, and now I'm on Vashon Island, no longer in Santa Cruz.
Oh, okay. Cool. Be sure to tell Shira the next time you call in so she can update our database.
Oh, okay. I get around a lot, Tom, mainly because I'm keeping an eye on the houseless people.
Okay.
The thing I wanted to bring up is, do you have any current information on the children who are, in my opinion, their rights are not only not represented, but are being put through trauma that, as you know, with smaller kids,
right.
They experience failure to thrive.
Yes,
so,
and there's over 2,800 of these children who we know of have been stolen from their parents at the border who are still missing. And there's the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. This is from Daily Kos, a piece by Gabe Ortiz, who's just been all over this story for a long, long time. I encourage you to check out his writings at Daily Kos, dailykos.com. The Congressional Hispanic caucus leaders have called for a multi-agency meeting featuring top administration officials who have carried out Trump's separation policy, writing in a letter that they've been unable to meet with some officials independently. Their answers have indicated the department's failed to communicate about this barbaric policy's implementation and only worsened an already horrific humanitarian disaster. So the Hispanic caucus is on this. You know, they're trying to do something about this, but... so far, don't know. We don't know what's going on, and this administration, they are in defiance of a federal court order that they reunite these children. That is like
right.
Almost 200 days now, and
yes.
and that covered. I think they're down to a couple of hundred kids that are covered by that particular court order, and this is a crime. I mean, this is a crime against the Constitution. It's a crime against the country. It's a crime against humanity, and I sure hope that a number of people in this administration are held to account for it. But Mick, I don't have a specific update for you. I'm sorry. You may want to check with the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, any of the members of the Hispanic Caucus. Annie in Little Rock, Arkansas. Hey, Annie, what's on your mind today?
Good morning. Thank you for accepting my call. The thing that's on my mind this morning is I often watch free speech TV and MSNBC and other stations that provide a lot of information about what's going on with the Trump administration and the laws that they're breaking. And my question is, I think it's really important that we are kept informed. But also, in addition to informing us, I think as we get closer to the Mueller investigation being reported on or whatever, that we that there needs to be more of a focus on telling or devising what can be done once it happens, and maybe he's not indicted for anything, because there are a lot of people who are engaged who are extremely frustrated and on the verge of maybe just saying, forget it, our voice doesn't matter. And then there are other people who maybe are on the fringes who would like to get engaged, but the reporting and what's going on is building it up to a point, showing up like a pattern of, okay, so what? They did the investigation. They found out what's wrong. It doesn't matter. So why should we vote? Why should we stay engaged? And I think more emphasis need to be put on what can we do when this happens.
Yeah. The Annie, just from looking at history, what Republicans have done in the past, the Democrats have failed to do. And I think, you know, and it's disheartening to me, frankly, that Democrats have failed to learn from this lesson. When they went after Bill Clinton, for example, and I'm guessing from being from Arkansas, you were paying attention during those times. When they went after Bill Clinton, it started out back when before he was even governor, he had invested $34,000 in a land deal along a river. It was Whitewater River. And it was supposed to be a subdivision, and it didn't work out, and all the investors lost their money. And so Clinton got screwed. I mean, you know, he lost his money. And, but somehow the Republicans thought that that was a crime, that there, you know, whoever walked away with the money, you know, might have been a friend of Clinton's, blah-de-blah, there's got to be a crime here. And so they started the investigation, and then they didn't find any crime. In fact, it exonerated him. So they rolled that investigation over into an investigation of Hillary Clinton and her time at Rose Law Agency. She must have committed some crime there. They couldn't find any crime there. So then they rolled that over. And each one of these were, you know, basically impeachment investigations. They were talking impeachment each one of these times. Then they rolled that over into an investigation. She had fired some people in the travel office in the White House. And oh my God, she can't do that. Well, it turns out she could do that. And then, you know, and then the Jennifer Flowers lawsuit came along, and oh well, let's get on that. And that led them to, you know, Monica Lewinsky, which led them to their final impeachment. But the point is that they never let go. They started out with the premise that this guy, Bill Clinton, is so morally corrupt that he shouldn't be in the White House, and we're going to find a way to take him out. And the Democrats have not been doing that. And although the Republicans have been accusing the Democrats of doing that, because Republicans always accuse Democrats of doing what Republicans do whenever they have a chance. And frankly, I think that the Democrats should be doing that. You know, they should be.
Yeah.
And you know, hopefully these investigations that they're starting right now, you know, I think that there's already enough stuff right on the ground. I mean, just the simple fact that Donald Trump broke the law, campaign finance violations, or he ordered Michael Cohen to break the law. Cohen's going to prison for 3 years for this. Trump should be too, because he ordered it to happen. He broke the law in order to win the White House by hiding his affairs with Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels. That, in my opinion, is enough to impeach him over. And we've known that for a year.
Yes.
So, you know, it's like, where are the Democrats? And, you know, and the response has been, well, we're going to wait for the Mueller hearing, or, you know, a report to come out. Well, the Mueller report is on the edge of coming out. And increasingly, it's looking like there's not going to be any indictment of the president, because Mueller is operating in these Justice Department guidelines that say that you can't indict a sitting president. And Trump is going to use that. And now Bill Barr is saying, oh, and by the way, if they don't indict somebody, we're not going to release the information about other crimes that they might have committed, because they weren't indicted. And that wouldn't be fair to somebody who's actually innocent or wasn't indicted. And Trump is not innocent. He's not being indicted, not because he didn't commit the crimes, but because these are the Justice Department guidelines, which is, you know, enough to scramble all of our brains. I mean, this is crazy. But that's how, you know, it really appears that it's going to play out. Annie, thank you so much for the call. Yeah, in answer to your question, how do we stay engaged? I think we just, you know, this democracy, this country, our neighbors, you know, our quality of life, our children, the world that they're going to inherit, all those things hinge on our staying politically engaged. So let's not give up here. There's still a long way to go on this. Annie, thank you for the call. It's good to hear from you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.